So here we go. Hello, everyone. Our topic today is annotation and coding using digital tools. And first of all, I would like to know, maybe by maybe you can raise your hand or write in the chat, have some of you used any digital tools for coding research data before? And I mean text data, so kind of categorizing, tagging, whatever word you have used for it. So some of you done this before? Either using Atlas-D or Catma or NVivo or just by hand. Some of you have, someone has used Atlas before. Yes. So some have experience from both. Yes. And I think one of the traditional forms for this would be just using a pen and paper and some different colored markers, and then overlining things with that, doing that kind of classifying things in the textual data using just a hand and paper system. I know for a fact that that is something I used back in the day in my earliest in a master's degree phase, I believe. And when I first found out about the digital tools for doing this, I was both overjoyed but also frustrated that I hadn't known about them before, or that they had not been available to me before, because they make the process so much easier, I think, and you kind of get to the point faster, or can use more of your time to the with the actual analysis. And it's also kind of, I think there's this playful nature to using these annotation tools that kind of gives you new ideas as well. I hope you will discover perhaps some of those yourself when you start doing this, unless you have done so before. So for those of you who have already previously used some annotation coding software and procedures, it might be that there's not that much new things for you here, so we are going through the very basics. But please feel free to ask if you have a suggestion, a question, something you've thought about, or if you have good practices to share with others. Please feel free to do that. But let's first look at coding a bit more in general. What do we mean by annotation coding? How it can be used? Because it's not as familiar for all, I believe. So what we are actually doing when we are annotating or coding data, we are creating metadata. So we are kind of creating descriptions or categories for the digital data. And there are, of course, diverse forms of analysis, many different things we can do with this information, do with this metadata we create. It can help us kind of just describe the data. So what's in there when you have annotated or coded the data, you can kind of get the big picture. What's in here? What types of content, what types of themes, topics can be found. You are able to perhaps count frequencies, even in qualitative research. As you know, it's sometimes necessary or helpful to kind of understand how much something arises, how large certain topics are in the data, for example. The one thing that I find particularly useful or nice is that it enables cross-tabulating. So you can kind of compare different things in different documents, like do these two things always come up together, for example, or are these two things always separate? So making these kinds of comparisons between different documents, different codes or categories you create using annotation. And annotating and coding can be used for many different kind of breadths of data, so different kind of units. Here's an example of phrase level annotation. You can even annotate or code just one word at a time. Here are a bit longer phrases. So, for example, here the data has been annotated. It's in Finnish, but it's been annotated to identify individuals, so persons, dates, locations, organizations that often have one or two or maybe three words in them. But you can also annotate larger units, so sentences, paragraphs, even whole documents. So here is an example from Atlas D software, actually, where you can see that, for example, there are maybe the light or the contrast is not that visible, but for example, there's the first sentence starting Atlas D has been permanently reinventing blah blah blah, that has been coded as a one sentence is coded as product development with a product development code. So this is actually already a view of the Atlas D software you can see here. So this is from Atlas D training data where you can kind of try out things for yourself and see how this coding might happen, for example. But in research, this annotation process, we often call it coding. It really depends a bit on your research area, your scientific background, your own discipline. So I am trying to use both kind of phrases here, annotation and coding, both concepts. But of course, you in your own research, you use the terms that you feel most comfortable with and that are probably the ones that are common in your field. And this is also a very kind of base level process that can be connected to many different methods. So several different analysis methods, such as thematic analysis or network analysis, for example. Discourse analysis would be the kind of examples of the kinds of methods where you could use annotation or coding. So it is in itself not a method. It's a tool or a part of the research process that you can use in many different approaches, with many different methods. It's kind of just a step in the whole research process, one step in there. And here is a place, an example of a place where you can find a bit of help with the concepts, if that is something you are wondering about. So sometimes it can be difficult to describe exactly what the research process has been like. And I always like to give a tip about the SAGE research methods. I'm not sure if you are familiar with this, but you can find it in through our university library database, UCDoc. Just type in SAGE research methods and it will give you the link to the user interface. So in practice, it's a collection of methodological research literature, and you can also, what I really like is this visualization where you can kind of see I have here searched with the term coding, and it kind of, with this visualization, it gives me all kind of the neighboring terms it's connected to. So it gives me qualitative data analysis, which is the larger term, and coding is usually part of that. And then narrow terms for coding, which I've opened up here, axial coding, coding scheme, in vivo coding, and so forth. We will go through some of these concepts today, but please feel free to explore and search in Sage Research Methods and read a bit more closely. So, in the database, when you click on, for example, axial coding, you get a list of links to research or methodological research literature, which can help you go forward. For example, with pondering, designing your methods, writing out your methods, and so forth. So this just as a tip on how to kind of tie your research and tie your methodology to the wider methodological literature. But let's look at some terms related to coding and some practical terms. Actually, I could first ask you, those of you who have done coding before, have you tied it to like what as part of what method have you used it? Do you want to share either on mic or chat? Was it part of thematic analysis or which would be very common in our fields, or discourse analysis or something else? Or do you have a name for it? Thematic analysis, thematic, yes. So those experiences as well. Yes, I believe a lot of the examples we'll go through today will be kind of connected to that, but I hope you keep an open mind as to what kind of uses you can apply coding to. So open coding is something that's actually very common for thematic analysis in particular. And what it really means is that you code as you go. So you start reading the data, and as you read the data, you create codes. You code full sentences or phrases or paragraphs, whatever is the optimal width of a quotation for you, and you give it a code. And as you read, you find out you might have some presumptions about what kind of codes you want to use or need, but as you go on reading, you will find more and more, and the kind of codes you don't really even expect or think about. So, in open coding, there is you have a research interest or research problem, but you don't necessarily even have a really, really precise research question. It can be used as a very explorative method. So, you code as you go. Also, inductive coding or data-driven coding are terms that are used for this process. And kind of a subset of this could be called this in vivo coding, which kind of just means that codes the code names what you call something. The words they come from the data itself. So the meaning of this, or the purpose of this, to is to go to really to extremes to avoid making interpretations. So instead of using your own words to create a code, you use codes, you use words from the data. So for example, if you are coding interview data, you have interviewed people, and then you start the analysis process by coding. In vivo coding would mean that you would only code using the exact terms that the interviewees have used. But it's kind of a subset of that. And again, that's your choice, depends on your research approach. Then again, in this example we had here, the codes are clearly interpretations or perhaps even decided beforehand by the researcher. So, for example, in the first sentence that is coded here about Atlas T, the code is product development. So there's this kind of interpretation already that this sentence, this the first sentence has to do with product development, even though it is not explicitly mentioned in this text itself. So open coding is a very common form of using annotation or coding procedure and software. And there are different stages to open coding often because of its nature. You create code, new codes as you go forward. It's really common that you have to go through the same data perhaps several times. This is, of course, very common for qualitative research in general. But here the need is practical. You have to go through it again. If you're in the midway in your data, you come up with a new code and you realize that this is something relevant and I need to use it for the first part as well, then you have to go back and re go through the documents again and give that with that code in mind and think about where you can possibly use it. But then there's this stage of axial coding. So when you kind of feel you have gone through the data, and of course these stages might differ, they might overlap a bit depending on your research. You get to the stage where you start finding connections between different codes. You might start to group them together. So you can perhaps see that there are different levels of codes, for example, that there is some kind of hierarchy that this phenomenon I have coded using this particular code, it is actually a subset or a subcategory of another code. And then you might have to somehow create this hierarchy in the software in the coding process as well. So there's also this kind of selective coding term that is used. It's also a question of research approach. So sometimes in open coding, you also realize, or actually usually you realize at some point that there are particular codes that are particularly important for your research. So in open coding, there's often a lot of codes that are not necessarily useful in the end. And at some point during the analysis, you might notice that this code is not that relevant. So you might not need to go through that whole data with that particular code. You can kind of reject codes as well during the process. So we kind of call this selective coding. It's one way of putting it. It could also be understood just as a part of the open coding process of the nature of open coding itself. But there are these different stages or forms of open coding that you kind of need to be aware of. And if you think of the typical process, how it could go, it could go like this, that you start with open coding, just creating, going through the whole data, coding as you go. Then you might create code groups, so group codes together. You are kind of perhaps reaching towards the thematic already, or maybe not. Then you kind of do the stitching up part where you might correct some codes. You might realize that, oh, these codes are actually, two codes are actually the same thing. Or you realize that I have this code, but it actually holds, it's too broad. It holds two or three different kinds of phenomena in it, and you might have to go through it and divide it into two or three new ones. So kind of this polishing, cleaning up part of the coding. And This is often a very hands-on, loaded phase of the work where you really have to go through the data again and again and again, and perhaps do the kind of things that are kind of manual in a sense that you just have to correct things, combine things, make decisions. And I've noticed that it's very useful to have some kind of a work diary. So kind of just making notes about what you do, what did you do with the codes? You rejected a code, or you divided some codes, or you merged some codes together. Just having these written out, keeping this kind of a diary or notes about what you did, I found it very useful, especially for the reporting phase. So when you actually start writing, you don't just have to try to remember what you did, but you can more easily describe your methods when you have actually made these notes already. And then we get to the actual analysis part. So make note, this is not a process of this is not a research process. This is the whole research process. This is not analysis process. This is the process of open coding. So it kind of leads to analysis. But with analysis here, I mean the kind of analysis you can do using the software, using the code, then interpreting those results, interpreting those kind of results that come from the analysis tools. That's what we usually call analysis in qualitative research. So here it's merely a technical term at this stage. So the research itself is not done after the analysis phase, but perhaps the practical process of working with the codes is. So starts with the coding, and then you start doing creating these code groups, fixing up, polishing the coding scheme, and you get to the analysis part, playing around with the codes, seeing how they work together, where they reoccur, where they don't, and so forth. But then another approach, theory-based coding, or we could call this deductive coding, is something that starts from a very different point. So it starts with a coding scheme. I already mentioned that word coding scheme earlier, or some people call it coding schema. So it's a term that's meant to describe all the codes in the data. So you kind of have a plan how you are going to code. What are the codes? What are perhaps code groups? Or what are the different levels, hierarchies, connections between these codes? So when you do deductive coding, that's when the coding scheme is created first, and then you start the hands-on part with the data. Sometimes this coding scheme is first tested. You can perhaps first test it using a smaller data set, especially if the coding scheme is something you have created yourself. But for example, if your research is about testing a theory or a model that's already existing, and that model might already have some kind of a clear categorization. Sometimes you can just implement that as your coding scheme and start applying it to your data. This is something that has good, as all coding approaches have their benefits and they have their challenges. So the theory-based coding, the benefit is that it really enables quantitative descriptions better. So the frequencies, how many of what category, you can really use that information perhaps a bit better than you can use frequencies in open coding when you have created the codes yourself, and they might not be equivalent with each other. So in theory-based coding, the numerical information that you get might be more useful. But of course, there's the challenge that you have the model and then you have the data, and the data might actually tell something different. There might be something that you find that's very relevant and interesting and useful for your research. But because you started using this theory-based model, it might not fit in that. The theory-based coding scheme might not give you the opportunity to kind of bring up these findings. And there's, of course, the moments where you have to think about what's the right choice here? Do I still continue with this and keep in mind this observation for later, and work on it with a different approach, or do I change my coding procedure? There's, of course, the possibility of doing some kind of combination as well. So, open coding, which was inductive coding, and then this theory-based deductive coding, those are the two main approaches for coding. All right, so there might also be a situation where you do coding together. Do any of you have experience from doing coding with others? Some have, Ville at least mentions, yes. And Kivin mentions, yes. And some have even done it with different programs. All right. So some programs offer some support. For example, Atlas D does offer some support for several coders. And of course, the process can be fairly different depending on are you doing inductive or deductive coding. And when you have a common coding scheme that you all use, you can actually incorporate the calculation of this intercoder reliability in your data, in your research, I mean. Because when you have several different coders, there's of course the question or pondering of how reliable are the results if we are all, for example, creating our own codes. That's also an approach that's completely feasible in certain research approach here during exploratory research, for example. But if you want to kind of calculate and show to your readers that yes, we have used the same coding scheme and we have interpreted it in a similar way, then you need to calculate intercoder reliability. So this is a process where each coder codes perhaps a smaller data, it could be the whole data, often it's a smaller data set, depending on the breadth of the project and the data. And each coder codes the same data set independently of each other, without checking what the others have done. And then there are kind of these formulas that you can use to calculate the intercoder reliability, the calculate this percentage of similarity between the different coders. And it's kind of a blurry line of what exactly is a good percentage, but it's something that you might want to report if you have several coders and if you have a joint coding scheme. So it's something that can give an impression of how uniform worthy opinions or approaches of these different coders. So it's fairly easy to use when you're doing deductive coding, deductive annotation. But if you're using open coding, I would recommend that first one coder uses open coding to create a coding scheme, and then others use this scheme and calculate, and their results are kind of calculated. But yes, several coders, and there's also technical possibilities for making this possible with Atlas D, for example, so that you still have the kind of the security of nothing getting lost, but still several coders being able to work with the same data. So what are the actual tools how to do this coding or annotation? We already mentioned, I mentioned a few in the beginning, and you have mentioned in the chat some of the programs you have used. There's loads of these qualitative data analysis tools. So the short for that is QDA, so QDA tools. And there's also some tools that are developed particularly for linguistic analysis because it might have a bit of different needs than these more general thematic or discourse analysis. And there's a list of different software, different tools here, but you can even do this kind of annotation in some kind of a tabulator program like Microsoft Excel, or its equivalent, OpenOffice, LibreOffice equivalents, if the data is consisting of fairly short texts like survey responses. So, for example, I have personally used Excel several times for coding these short open answers in a survey because it's been an easy way to do it, and there's been numerical data that has to be processed, so it's been kind of easy to keep it in the same format, same environment. But for but that's kind of a special case. So for longer texts and completely text-based and perhaps image-based data, you might want to use some of these tools. And today we are taking a look at Atlas D and Catmo. But first, here's a brief example of Praat. So there were also some linguists on this course, so perhaps you are more familiar with these than I am. But here's an example of Praat software, where you can see on the top you can see this audio data, so sound, some sound waves here, or kind of a graphical representation of audio data. So you have an audio recording, and then below it you have the actual text format of what is being said. And you can have these different kinds of different kind of levels of analysis here, words, syllables, so forth, voice quality even. So just to kind of give you a glimpse of this kind of analysis software as well, that can also be used for coding in a sense. But we are looking at non-auditory data when we are looking at Atlas D and Catma. So text, but also analyzing images is possible using this software. Yes. I was going to show you an example of annotations using Excel, but because of what time is it, I think I'll jump right into Atlas at this point. So just to give you, before we go hands-on, just a bit of a
background here. So you can find these links also in Moodle, but there are links to manuals and video tutorials by Atlas Data Software manufacturer, software creator. So there's loads of materials there and so many different examples and different use cases. We will only be able to briefly glimpse those all the available use possibilities today. I think Atlas D is currently a bit like, well, I think like Adobe Photoshop or something, in a sense that there's this program that was originally created for one purpose, but it has added new features, so that currently very few people actually use all of them, just because one person doesn't have enough time in the world to really extensively use all the features. So I also say this so that you don't get discouraged if you notice that there are so many different tools here, and what do these and these and these mean? You don't have to get a handle of everything at once. It's enough that you kind of get the basics and start exploring as your time and energy allows you to, and as you need. So there are tons of possibilities there now. We'll first look at Atlas and then at Katma. But some words about Atlas. As I said, it's a qualitative data analysis software, and it has two different versions. So there's this cloud version, and then there's the desktop version. So you can use it either as a program on your desktop, which you install, or you can also use it in a browser. But the browser version, the cloud version, it's useful for the coding stage, but it's not really that useful for the actual analysis, like going forward, doing cross tabulations, exploring like what you have coded. So if you want to use that, it's useful when you have, well, first of all, the kind of data that doesn't include sensitive information. So first make sure it's the kind of data that you actually can upload in the cloud, that you have permission to do that. But second of all, it's useful when you want to code from like anywhere you are, any safe computer you use. And it can be really useful when you have several coders to have all of them coding together in the same cloud. But when you get to the stage where the coding is like fairly done and you want to start cleaning up and doing more groups and so forth, then I recommend changing to the desktop version. There's some limitations, or a lot of limitations, to the browser version in what you can do with the codes, but also some functions like renaming, arranging codes are just much more easier to use on the desktop version. And you can fairly easily download the whole project from browser to desktop. So that's just a few clicks to do that. So what can you actually do with Atlas D? You can analyze, well, textual data. It can be all kinds of different forms. It can be letters, diaries, it can be interview transcriptions, different kind of official documents. For example, currently I'm doing a project where I have uploaded these EU legislation documents to the program, so that functions as my data. It can be fiction. It can be journalism, news articles, magazine articles, and so forth. So all different kinds of data. And the file formats that the program approves of, here's a list. It's .docx, .doc, ODT, .txt, .html, but also .pdf. So .pdf is especially a good choice when you want to keep the original formatting. So if you also want to see what the original document looked like, what images were included, what other like graphic elements were included, for example, on a web page, then I recommend PDF. For example, I have myself used Atlas for analyzing online discussions so that I used PDF formats of those discussions. But then again, if that part is not important to you, if it's not important to see what it looked like originally, then you might just want to take the text. Last week and this Monday, Marco showed you Abby Find Reader, and some of you had tried it out, and you noticed that when you have images or PDFs or old documents, they might not be very clear visually. Then it might be even easier to do the coding using just the text. So from Abby Find Reader, you will also able to not just OCR, not just read the text from the image or PDF, you will also able to export it as a Word file, for example, so DocX. So that might be useful for you if you want to be able to fluently read from the page rather than having to squint and try to find like what this blurry image was really about. There are also there's also some support for Excel files. So if you have data that is originally in an Excel format, so there might be surveys or social media data, you can also import that into Atlas as a whole. And the benefit of this that it will keep the connections between the metadata and the text or the closed survey questions, for example, questions of with Likert responses like agree, completely agree, all the way to completely disagree. So if you've had that kind of numerical data connected to the text, then this might be something you want to think about if you still want to use Atlas D for the written open answers. Then Atlas also supports image data, so loads of different image and audio file formats, and even video. But we are focusing on image and text. Those are the main focuses for us today. And I think this is a great place to start. So if you have data, or if you want to use the data provided to you in Moodle, this is a great time to take those up. I will stop share for a moment and show you these things in the Atlas D software. So they are here in the slides in text format, but I will now show them just using the program itself. I think this is also a great moment to ask you, what kind of data do you have? Do you have data from your own research that you want to start trying out, or do you use the one provided in the Moodle environment? At least some have the example data. Yes, have you been able to unpack it? You can also just say in the mic or write, whichever is. Yes, someone's already uploaded the data to Katma. Great. And some have their own data, some use the example data. Yes. All right. I'll start sharing my screen, and I will first go through some of the basics in Atlas and then go through some of those basics in Katma. So two different programs, and let's go one by one. I think it's easier rather than jumping between the programs. There are also some differences as to how things are called in these two programs. In Atlas, they are, for example, annotation, creating annotations, it's called coding, and we create codes. But in Katma, they are tags, and it's tagging. So here you can already see that there's these slightly different terminologies in use, and that might be kind of odd at first to figure out, but that's also why we will go one by one with these programs. So let's see, I will share my screen at this point. So here you can hopefully see I have the folder open for this course, and there's the artist interviews zip. So this is the file you were able to download from Moodle, and just in case you have not yet extracted it, I will quickly show you how to extract. So when you get a zip file in Windows, you just right click on the zip file, and there's extract all, and then it offers you a place where to extract. So I have already done this previously, so that's why I have the artist interviews folder already in place. But just this simple, just right click and choose extract all, and then you can extract the zipped compressed files. So you have several files inside this zip file. And I have them here, five PDF files on my computer. And also one more quick tip. If you are not familiar with this, I think we discussed this in the first or second meeting of this course. It can be difficult if you're not used to these quick buttons. It can be difficult to change between watching what's happening in Zoom and then going to your own program. So remember Alt and Tab combination for changing between windows. I will also write it here in the chat. So when you press the Alt button and then click on the Tab button, you can change to a different window. And I will now change into Atlas. So when you launch Atlas D, if you have downloaded that, you see something like this, probably on under your projects. You don't see this many. If you have not used it previously, it might have some sample project, but that's it. So when you start creating a new project, there's this button with a folder and a plus, and you first give this project a name. So I'll just call it Artist Interviews because that was the name of the data. And this is the new empty project I have created here. So this is something you should see as well on your computer if you created a new project. And let's bring the documents here. So in the Home tab, you have the Add Documents button where you can bring individual files or even add whole folder of contents. So let's do that. And I will from here copy the name of the folder or the address to the folder I was in. So click somewhere in the folder you have the in the window and in the address bar where you have the data, Control C, copy, and then here Control V. And five documents were added. But you can also add files individually, just add files, and I could have as easily like come here to choose all the five files open, and it would have done the same thing. So adding documents here and just saving time to time, just to be sure, Control S. So this is what it looks like when you open the program, you bring the documents. And I think there are three most important places in this program. So you have documents. You can also open them up here in the sidebars. So there's this explore window, which always shows these kind of the main features, main areas where you might want to move in this program. And when you double click on the documents, it also opens up here a document manager window. And here I can see the names of the documents, and they are ordered here in all five of them. Then I have a codes view, which is currently empty. So this opens a code manager, but since I have not been coding yet, it's empty. And then there's code groups, which is useful for grouping and arranging codes once they have been created. But I will close these for now and open up the first document. So these are artist interviews done by our researcher, Yang Ying, who has kindly published this research data also in Yuke's, where you also were provided a place where you also were provided a link to in Moodle. And as I mentioned, I think last week, Yuke's also has over 200 different sets of open data currently. So it might be useful or interesting to you in the future to look into that, or perhaps use these kinds of data sets for practicing if you are not currently doing any research with these types of data sets yourself. The actual coding, how does it start or happen? Let's see. Here's first some kind of title, then there's a brief description of the content, then the interviewer is asking a question, but I will jump right into the artist's response. So here, Zhang Ke-chun mentions about media reports. So I start painting just using my mouse. And let's give this code. So I painted the text, then clicked mouse right button and choose apply codes. There's also a button in the top of the window called apply codes. And because I have not yet created any, I can start creating as I go. So for example, this could be something like project description. And I write out the code I want to use and then the plus button. And as you can see, on the right margin, there now appears this quotation with this code called project description. So the artist is describing how they started this photography project. And now, when I look at this quotation again, I kind of notice that the first sentence, it's really more about how media understood this project rather than describing about the actual project itself. So I want to change that quotation. I think there is too much. The first sentence is not relevant, so I will just drag this and resize the quotation. It also quickly came and went, this text that said resize quotation. You maybe didn't see it, but it, the program also shows you that okay, we have done this. Okay, and then going on to the first sentence, I think that might be interesting and relevant as well. So I will also code that, but using a different code. So apply codes. And let's see, this is about media coverage, I think, media about media coverage of arts. So I will give it that as a code. So, couple of first codes done. So, just a question of painting text, giving it a code. And now let's see, there's also this next quotation, which I already coded with project description. I could also code part of that that says, I was planning to go out and take photos. Here's clearly a mention of the medium of this art. So I want to just tag these or code these as well, parts where a particular medium is mentioned. And I'll just do it here. Medium photo. So the art medium used is photo. And as you can see, I can have these overlapping, different overlapping quotations. So even though the larger quotation is tagged or coded as project description, in it there's one sentence that is coded just as a photo. Let's see. So the next one, there's some description of this novella that the artist was reading. And we can here again paint a larger part and code it as okay, it's project description, a description about how this art project started. But I think also it mentions literature, so I want to tag it or code it also as literature. So now you can see the same quotation can also have several different codes. So project description and literature, they can both be present in the same a quotation. And actually, I don't think there's a cap on how many different codes you might have for one particular quotation. So one or 10, or I'm not really sure if there's a cap. There could be like a technical cap on how many you can have, but I've had several in them, and it's always worked. I think you don't need dozens usually for analysis purposes. Then it kind of loses its purpose, loses its usefulness. But just to show you that it's possible to have several of them. So Let's see. Let's go back to the lecture material. So we went through how you import research data into Atlas T and how you start coding. But just to go through some terms. So I used them already, but terms in Atlas T, what they mean, there's quotation, which always means the highlighted part of data that's annotated. So here it was text, but it can also be, for example, image. Then you can use, we speak about codes. So these are the single codes. Here are examples of teacher and engineer, and then again, a code group that these two might belong to could be professions, for example. So you can create code groups as well. Then you have documents, like we just saw. So document is always a single file. So this is one of, I think, one of the crucial questions you have to decide for yourself as well. Do you want to bring your data into the software as a single file or several files? For example, if you have, like in this, here's an example of interview round one, interview round two. So this is the formulation I've used that, for example, in a research project, I had interviews that were done a few months from each other for the same people. And the first round of interviews, I uploaded all those as separate PDF files to Atlas D. So each interview, each person was a single file. And then these files, these documents were grouped as interview round one. And later on, I wanted to bring the round two of these interviews to the same document or the same Atlas project. And I did that by again bringing each new interview as a single file, but I grouped them as interview round two. And why I did this was to enable analysis. So I would say that if you have in your data this clear, concise holes in a sense that this is one letter or this is one novel short story or this is one interview, you probably want to bring it as one file that then forms one document in Atlas D because it helps you when you start analyzing. If you want to, for example, do a cross tabulation of how many of these interviewees mentioned, like which ones of them mentioned this topic, then it's easy to do with cross tabulation when each document represents a single interview and a single interviewee, for example. Please feel free to ask and share your experiences as well as we go forward. So, as we mentioned, you can bring in documents. You can also add documents later. You can bring more documents. Even after you have started coding, you can group documents for analysis purposes as well. And in Atlas, you have a few examples, a few different possibilities for coding. You have free coding that I just showed you, and there you also have automatic coding. So you can do an automatic search that finds phrases with certain criteria and codes them. And what's useful for you is, of course, dependent on your research project. Sometimes a combination of these might be useful as well. But let's get back to the program. So here I have the artist interviews in Atlas D, and I have created a few codes. Let's go to document number two. I'll just add a couple of codes here as well, so we can get some examples of how to use them. Here's clearly a topic of waste. That's kind of inspiration for art. But then it's also part of kind of the project description, like how the artist came up with the idea for their art that was about waste. So now I added that code there as well. And here, hometown is mentioned, might be a useful code. And let's quickly look at document three as well. I'll just plant a few more codes here. All right, I think we have a few codes now. We are good to continue. So, the practical coding, you can see here the open documents that I started coding into. But to get a glimpse of, okay, what are the codes that I've been using? Do I need to rearrange, rename? I go to the codes. So, in the left explore window, double click on codes, and it opens the code manager. And here you can see all the codes I have created so far. So project description has the most. It has three codes to it, or three times that it's used. This column grounded tells you the amount of times you have used, the amount of quotations where you have used this particular code. And here is the column groups. We do not yet have groups, but it would also show here if you had code groups already in use. And here I could maybe start with thinking about this hometown, looking at this one. Double clicking shows me what the quotation was. Let's see, my feeling for my hometown first forced me to think about why and how the change has happened. I might want to rephrase this so it's more related to just home. Whenever home is mentioned, I want to find out all those mentions in the data so I can rename the code. So right-clicking on the code and choosing rename, you can always change the names of codes, make corrections, and so forth. Then, if you look at code groups, getting more sense of what is in the data, on the left panel, double clicking on Code Group Manager, I can start thinking about what kind of combination, what kind of larger groups these codes form. And on the top left, new group. And let's think. I think, for example, nature and home are all related to environment, different environments. Now I do hope you don't take to heart this actual content of the coding I'm doing here. This is very quickly off the top of my head, but just to give you an idea of how in the software how to do this. So I create a new code group environments. So it's here. And underneath, you can see codes that are in the group and codes that are not in the group. So on, if I want to add codes to this new code group environments, I have to choose them on the right and pick home and click on the arrow to the left. And then let's pick nature and also click on the arrow to the left. And now we have two codes in this code group environments. So this is the kind of method that can be used to look at the different codes, rethink, rename, and then grouping them together as well. So this is that part in brief. Here in the image, in the slides, you can actually see a more detailed view of this data isn't finished, but you can see a project that's well advanced. I think this was it from the last stages of this analysis. We ended up with my colleagues with 1,320 codes. So don't be afraid of codes. You might, when you do open coding, you might end up with huge amounts, but then you can make sense of them through grouping into code groups, for example. So here you can actually see some of the code groups, and how many codes are in each group. And these code groups are, in this case, they were a step further towards the actual analysis. So don't be afraid of coding as much as you want to, I guess, is my message here. And here, the view you already saw of code groups as well. And then a couple more things that might be useful for your analysis. You might want to export code lists or export annotations, view and export annotations using these codes. So whenever in the Atlas program you see this Excel export button, it means you can export and view separately from this program. So it might be useful, for example, you might need to export code groups or codes or both to for a publication, for example, or just to go through independently and view and think about them and think about what are their connections and combinations that you can make. So then the Excel export is great, and it's great. You can choose what elements you want to include, and it creates an Excel sheet for you. But then, what's especially useful in the actual analysis phase, I find, is viewing annotations using these codes. So when I get to the part where I actually want to know, think more closely about, all right, what does this environment, for example, mean in the data? Or what does let's see, individual code, I think one with more project description. So I want to rethink that code, think about what I understand, what kind of understanding I get based on this topic, based on this data. I double click on this particular code, and it gives me all the quotations that it include this code. And here you can see why it matters. What is the size of the quotation? So when you start coding the data and you choose what to paint over, this view is where you actually see what you painted over. So if you want to use Atlas D for going through the data and then picking a code or a group of codes and reading what was used, where it was used, reading those excerpts of data, reading just those parts of the text, then you want to go here. And this is where it matters, like what you included. If you only painted over a couple of words and you see them here, it might not tell you much. So this is why in qualitative analysis, I do recommend that often it's better to include more than less in your quotation when you are coding. But of course, this depends on your approach as well. But if you still want to like go back deeper into the data, close read the data with the help of these codes, then longer quotations give you more context in this case. So, let's stop share for a minute, and then I will soon hop into CatMap, but few words about Atlas D at this stage, and we can continue with the practicalities tomorrow as well. So let's share the slides for a few minutes. So Atlas D also offers this AI-aided coding. So I just quickly showed you how to do coding the traditional way by yourself, and that is what we usually do. But there is this feature, new feature of Atlas that is AI-aided coding. And I personally have not really tried this out much yet. Have any of you tried out AI coding? In Atlas, no. So might be worth a try. I think it's very interesting what it can do. But as of yet, I do not have sufficient experience to with this AI coding to tell you like what are its strengths, what are its weaknesses, how it could be used. So I think we'll need more trials on that. It's a fairly new feature. I think it's been there for less than a year, and it's a beta version, as you can see. So it's still in development, but they are very enthusiastically offering it. Every time I open Atlas D now, it offers me AI coding opportunity as well. Again, tomorrow we can go deeper into this, but for analyzing using these codes for analysis, there are multiple different possibilities in Atlas. There are all kinds of word clouds and visualizations. The probably some of the most used and useful are, for example, code document table. So it just cross tabulates between the different documents or document groups you have and the different codes. So, for example, if you want to find out, you have, for example, different kinds of documents. You might have decisions from authority, these official decision papers, and you might have memos of discussions. You might, for example, wish to compare how some codes or topics come up in these two. So this might be a way to do. You have one group of documents that says, okay, these are discussion memos, and one group of documents which are the official decisions. And you could compare those with the codes and see how they come up. You can also cross tabulate between codes. So looking at which codes come up together, which do not, and there's the co-occurrence table for that. And then for even more detailed and complicated queries, you have query tool where you can, for example, include certain codes, quotations with certain codes, but include exclude others and so forth. So you can basically use Boolean operators, so and or not, to really go deep into and explore the data. And also you can save these searches and go back to them as the coding progresses to see what happens. So these are the basic analysis tools in Atlas. There are also some new built-in tools, network analysis, sentiment analysis, which is also AI-based, but still somewhat in development. But I think the time is running, so let's change into Katma next. So some of you had already started using it, and a few words about what Katma is. It's free software, German free software. There's a manual, there's tutorials available on the website. You can basically do the same basic coding in Katma as you do in Atlas, but the procedure is a bit different. So let's look at that in a minute. The big difference is that Katma data can be edited only in the cloud service. So be sure you can actually use the data you have on in that service if you start using it. Katma also has some visual analysis tools like Atlas, and you can also export analysis as Excel files or different kinds of image files as well. And you can use the same data for demonstration as in Atlas. But let's change into the actual software. So hopping into Katma at this point. So katma.de. And let me share. The screen. So here you can see the Katma front page, work with Katma link, which takes you to choosing the version. There's the older and newer version, and you want to pick the new one. And here I have logged in, and there's a older test project there, but let's create a new project. So again, artist interviews. So the beginning is the same as in Atlas. In both, you just start by naming your project. And here is the beginning. So here's where I could actually add new members to my team for coding together. I could also, here I can add documents. So let's add documents here, all five. Looks okay. Continue. I don't want to add metadata now, so now it is importing documents. And will apparently take a minute to do so. All right, so meanwhile, I will show you, just do a screen share. So in Katma, the greatest difference is that before you start coding, you create tags and tag sets. So you just go about this same process, but in a different order. You can kind of, I think, see that Atlas T kind of creates this affordance where you can go both either inductive or deductive coding, either way. Just starting coding is easy, but CATMA is designed to be first. It's designed so that you first kind of create, you first kind of design how you are going to go about it. So you have a coding scheme first, and then you start coding. I mean, of course, you can do inductive coding here as well, but you always have to create the code before you can use it. So in the tags part, you can create tags and tag sets. So these would be called codes and code groups in Atlas. And what I find really nice about it is that you can also give each code or each tag a color that's kind of visual and simple to identify quickly. So you can use it very easily as kind of a visual aid as well. And tags can also have properties. This is also a difference to Atlas, though. So you can give a code a choice of several different properties that you can add there as well. And these tags can also be grouped. So there's a tag set, but also inside it there can be tags and subtags, and even subtags can have subtags. So there's multiple level of hierarchy in this environment. So you can actually create. And let's see if my oops, there's something wrong with my CATMA demo effect. So that's why it took a moment to load. But let's see if I can still annotate. So let's pick here again. Okay, let's go here. Number three. So here I have one of the same documents we looked at in Atlas, and I can add a comment to it, but I can't yet tag because I don't have tag. So let's add a tag here. So first, I would love to add a tag, but I first have to create the tag set. So let's see. Environment, for example. And then if I go to annotation, here I can also, let's see. Now it's slowing down for some reason. Some reason here. Okay, I have a demonstration effect on the with the CATMA, so I just have to be content with showing you the slides. So with the annotation, again, similarly, you paint the part you want to annotate and you choose a tag. You can also create new tags in the same window as I tried to do, but it wouldn't update my tag set there. But here, for example, I have the tag set environment, and under it, I have two tags, nature and urban. And under nature, I have different subtags, mountains, beach, landscape, I have created. So the same process as in Atlas D, but starting with the tag sets. And you can also delete annotations just by choosing the annotation and deleting there. And this is again another difference to Atlas D. So in CATMA, you can't change the like what's in the annotation afterwards. You have to delete the annotation and create a new one if you want to change what is included in this particular annotation, where you want to use this code, what sentences or words are part of it. And again here, the place where you can create new tags and subtags also in Katma. And you can have color codes. The ones I have in this example are perhaps not the most logical ones, but you could like think of your own logic for the colors. If you don't care about what color they are, that's fine. But if you are a visual person who wants to wants these codes, the colors, to have some message, then you when you create the code, you might want to choose a color that somehow gives you information about that quotation. So for example, here I have part of the data that has two different colors in it. So they seem to be flora, so discussion about plants, and industrial, so a discussion about an industrial space, a factory space that was found in a field of weeds, as the artist here describes. So a place where industrial, urban industrial environment is discussed together with the natural environment. And if I were to use these colors in that manner, they could kind of right away tell me that this is a place where those types of content are combined. And the analysis in Katma, it begins by choosing the documents you want to be included. So there are different kinds of visualization tools there. As you can see, the word cloud, as again, like in Atlas, you can look at distributions of different codes, for example. So loads of possibilities there as well. Not as many as in Atlas, but I think you can get fairly far using this as well. And in some of the future lectures on this course, we will also look at tools that you can kind of use to process these codings further. So you can code data in Atlas or Katma, and then you can do things with that information in another software. So, for example, you can do these kind of network visualizations also in other software that might be better suitable for it or more useful for you. But I think our time is coming up. So I want to thank you all for your attention. I hope you got something, some ideas on how to use coding software for your research. And I will now stop the recording. So tomorrow we have a demonstration where we can go more into your data and your questions in more detail.